down the ground.
We're
receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 1075.MK0728, certificate number 53229. Riot Dogs.
I want to say at the top, none of the dogs named in this entry will come to a violent end.
Oh, that's a wonderful sort of advance. It's like an anti-trigger warning.
One thing I've noticed about the internet is people are very concerned about movies where animals come to harm.
Yep, I understand that.
I think there's a site where you can look up and see, hey, does this movie have any violence towards animals?
I cannot watch movies where children are hurt. I used to not care. You know, before I had a kid, I'd watch a movie. You'd throw 1,000 kids into a furnace. I didn't care.
These are like actual documentary hurt to kids?
No, even fictional movies. I feel like it is
simulated.
It's a lazy way to get the audience in a lot of movies, or, you know, it's a lazy way to get you to care about the plot. Like, oh, a child is kidnapped or hurt or scared or. And I have very little patience for it. If it doesn't really, really advance the plot, if it's at all gratuitous.
It works in politics too. You know, 90% of all politics is now like.
They're hurting the children.
But the children are in trouble somewhere.
I mean, the children are our future.
Yes.
I don't actually care about them, except for my own. And by extension, yours a little and some other friends.
So you want a Noah's Ark of maybe 9 to 15 kids?
Yeah, that would be fine. But, you know, one set of kids who aren't related to each other from all the world's peoples.
But so maybe you want the It's a Small World ride.
I want the It's a Small World ride.
A child in festive folk dress from all the continents.
Two children from all the continents. And then they have a kind of Blue Lagoon sort of teen sex awakening. But they don't couple with each other. They couple with, you know, they don't, the two kids from Indonesia don't. Have a baby. The kid, one kid from Indonesia and one kid from Iceland.
This is getting into a weird area.
And pretty everybody is just mochaccino colored and all the
kids on It's a Small World are not old enough to have kids.
No, right? No, no. Later, because they live in a utopia of pre-puberty, where it's sort of like Beyond Thunderdome, except there's no wrecked aircraft.
I'm interested in what the psychological roots are of this. I think a fairly new phenomenon of people being unable to watch a movie where a horse gets shot out from under a cavalry officer.
But they can see millions of people machine gunned.
Right,
and die.
But we've seen 50 cavalry officers die in the same scene. And I'm not sure, is the idea that the cavalry officers had it coming? Like they knew what they were getting into, but the poor horses.
I get into trouble for...
I honestly think that might be the root of it.
What? That humans deserve it?
Well, no, just that the animals don't know, you know? Yes, there was a scene where a car blew up, but I care more about the dog than the people because, you know, the dog had no idea. There's pathos to that. The dog couldn't understand the forces at work.
Yeah, I forget who said it, but the few times that I have quoted this person that I forget...
You got yelled at.
I get yelled at.
Well, name them so they get yelled at instead.
But you know what it is? It might be something that I got from watching The Sopranos. I feel like Dr. Melfi at one point says to Tony Soprano that sociopaths are often very concerned with animals and children.
What? Is that
like,
true?
Like they're, well, I mean, I talked to Dr. Melfi.
I thought serial killers were like cut up animals.
Well, right. But there's also, it's also like
a smaller group.
It's a sign where you cannot empathize with humans, but you really like put all your emotions into animals and children.
Wow.
Because you can't handle like other adult humans. But the few times I've ever, again, I guess it's quoting Sopranos, which I do deserve to get knocked down for.
Well, I mean, you don't want to imply that as a result, all animal lovers and sociopaths are animal lovers does not mean that all animal lovers are sociopaths. This is a classic Greek logic problem.
You're 100% right.
So if you're listening to this and you're an animal lover, you're clearly one of the good ones.
Right. And also what you're saying, this is all a roundabout way of saying that no animals are harmed in this episode of Omnibus.
Right. Except by implication, I guess they are, because this is an episode about street dogs, free-range urban dogs, or FRUDs, as I've decided to call them.
Are humans harmed in this episode?
the large population of stray or abandoned or sometimes feral dog populations that exist in cities all over the world.
Now, you have traveled in extensively and have seen street dogs, as have I. And my sense, at least, of the street dogs I've encountered is they're kind of living the life of Riley.
Yes.
They don't have any responsibility. I mean, some of them have tumors, but they sit around all day.
One thing to understand about street dogs is they're fitting an ecological niche, which means there's a pretty good life for them.
They're eating garbage. They lay in the sun.
I mean, look, we would all like them to have vaccines and pets and no lice. I'm not saying this is... that it's ideal to have hundreds of thousands of dogs on the streets of large cities.
Do you know people who have adopted dogs from South or Central America?
I do. I know that it's available. I don't think I have any close friends that have, but it's definitely a thing where there's enough rescue dog shortages in certain parts of the country, like Seattle, that you have to look elsewhere.
I know six different people, close friends, who have not rescued a dog, actually brought a dog back with them.
Oh, they saw it on vacation and their heart melted.
Yeah, they're sitting in Mexico and this dog comes by and they fed it some cheese, and then the next day it was there again and they fed it some cheese.
Aren't there like legal obstacles to bringing?
By day four, they have taken the dog to a veterinarian and they've started the process of getting it shots and its tumors taken care of, and you know, and 6 months later or whatever, 6 weeks later, the dog arrives fully vaccinated and dewormed and begins its new life, living a completely outrageously pampered life in Seattle, America, where it's fed kibbles and sleeps on the bed.
Well, I mean, the good thing about you knowing a few of these stories is apparently there's hope for these dogs. You know, that they're not, their upbringing doesn't lead to a lifetime of trauma, that they can settle into a life as a coddled lap dog.
Now, you've also seen street dogs be mistreated in these places, surely, because I have.
Yeah.
By the locals.
The shopkeeper that does not want the dog out front or...
hits it with a broom.
And it goes both ways. I mean, these dogs are... A lot of the social problems with these dogs revolve around violent incidents that begin with the dogs. People get bit a lot. I mean, Romania, for example, is a country where this has really been a flashpoint. Where there's, you know, something like on the order of 12,000 to 15,000 dog bites every year.
So I was attacked by dogs in Romania.
Yeah, so Bucharest has a huge, and the other big cities have big street dog problems.
These were not street dogs, they were feral dogs that were living wild.
What's the difference? Oh, they're out in the country.
They're in the country.
They're road dogs, not street dogs.
Yeah, road dogs.
Lane dogs.
And I was in a village, I was headed out across a field, you know, across the country. I was going over some low hills. And as I was leaving the village, a farmer came over to me, you know, stopped me on the trail and said, "Hey," and handed me a stick and said, "You know, you need to take this walking stick with you." And I was like, "Thank you. I've tried to have a walking stick, but it doesn't really work for me rhythmically." And he was like, "No, no, no." And he made the Romanian sound for dog, which, you know, barking dog, which was hum, 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 hum.
Romanian dogs say hum?
They say hum.
No wonder they're always running off.
And he made a little sign, you know, a hand with his sign to say, like, you know, dog, fierce dog. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ha ha. You know, at this point I'd been, did I tell you I'd walked across Europe? This is a story from that. I'd been walking for months and I was like,
without a stick.
Dogs, sticks. I get it. And I walked with this stick until I was over the hill and out of this guy's sight. And then I threw the stick down, and walked for another couple of miles. And then I'm walking through this sort of open country on top of a ridge, and way off in the distance, I see this head pop up out of the grass, and it's a dog, you know, and it's that kind of feral dog look. It kind of looks like a shepherd, but
yeah, it's a little of everything.
I see the head pop up and I can see it, you know, in the distance. And I'm like, uh-oh, it was just like it had a very uh-oh feeling. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more heads pop up.
Prairie dogs, but literal dogs.
And they're dogs. And I was like, oh, this is bad. And then they came and circled me and tried to get me down on the ground.
Well, I mean, if that's their behavior, that's a pack that has had luck with people-sized people.
And it was terrifying. And it was awful.
Wow.
And I know we promised that this episode had no...
We did not promise it would not have violence against indie rockers.
No dogs came to harm. In this case, you know, I had to fight these dogs with... And I had the advantage, the human advantage, of knowing how to throw rocks. And they knew about rocks, because when I started picking up rocks, they adjusted their tactic.
Do you think it's territorial? Like, were they just trying to keep you out of their ground? Because it can't be that they just bring down a person every week and eat like kings.
No, I don't think they were trying to eat me. I think it was territorial, because I kept moving. And they kept circling me and you know, launching attacks and working as a team.
Hey, were they playing this music from Star Trek?
No, there was no music. There was only me going, "Rarg! Rarg!" I was making as many rarg sounds as I could.
And they were saying hom hom.
And they were going hom hom hom. And I just kept trying to move and circle. And they were circling me and I was circling around and picking up every rock I could find and hurling rocks. And eventually I moved in such a way that they, you know, that
you were off their property.
It took a while, because they'd hang back and then they would launch another attack, and
they're, you tricky.
Know, and I'd feel like we'd reached an accommodation and I was like, okay, goodbye. And then something would spark it again and they'd come back after me. But eventually I got, well, the proof's in the pudding.
You're here today.
Here I am.
I mean, rural Romania is vampire country too. So you were possibly worried about these being the hellhounds of Dracula.
At night, I was worried about vampires. During the day, it was dogs. And then in the twilight, it was boars. Oh, and bears. Romania's got it all, really.
Do you think they
highly recommend?
Is it all the same? Like, when the sun starts to set, the dogs turn into boars and bears. And then when it's fully down, they turn into vampires? You never know.
There were bats too.
Werebears.
It could have been. Maybe it's the cycle of life in Romania.
Romania is a place where this has been a flashpoint recently because of some high-profile deaths over the last decade.
At the hand of dogs?
Yeah. Biting, and I mean, rabies spreads in countries where this is, or in cities and regions where this is a problem. And in this case, it was a 4-year-old, maybe a kid, and maybe not a Romanian kid, like maybe a tourist.
Hmm.
A tourist had a kid, you know, mauled by dogs.
Hmm.
And at that point, they passed some really draconian euthanasia laws. It's tricky because there's not a lot of solutions for these dog population problems when these populations get big. And they're big. You know, Moscow has about 50,000 stray dogs. Whoa. Bangkok might have as many as 100,000. A city like Tangier might have 30,000.
I've met the dogs in Tangiers, and they are very gentle.
They're chill.
Also, the ones in Santiago, I had a wonderful day with some stray dogs in
Chile?
Santiago.
Mm-hmm. We're actually going to get to the dogs of Santiago.
Czech Republic, a lot of sketchy dogs there that all seemed very nice. It was just the Romanian dogs I had problems with.
Huh.
And I'm validated. On the one hand, I don't want any tourist kids to be mauled. But on the other hand, I've struggled over the years to convey how dangerous they felt and how much I felt my life was threatened.
Well, 16,000 bites a year is not nothing. And, you know, rabies running amok as well. I don't want to act like this is a developing world problem. There are about 200 million stray dogs in the United States. The city of Houston has 1 million dogs.
What?
And that's not a a problem a municipality can solve.
When did you last see a stray dog? There are zero stray dogs in Seattle.
Well, Seattle, we're a stray dog importer. You know, we have to get stray dogs from shelters in Houston to fulfill our need to rescue dogs and start feeding them people food.
You're saying that in Houston there are just dogs roaming around?
There are 1 million dogs.
That does not... I have not had that experience in Houston of seeing 1 million stray dogs.
I wonder if we're not in the right parts of Houston. You know, and they probably keep a...
they're not on the Space Center campus, I can tell you that.
These numbers are from BARC, B-A-R-C, the city's largest pet shelter, or maybe the municipal animal shelter division. And a lot of it, I think, is the result of recent hurricanes. You know, dogs get... Dogs head out of flood-watered areas and wind up where there's shelters, which tend to be cities. You know, it's the same reason why cities get unhoused populations of people. So 200 million dogs in the U.S. alone. And, you know, the causes of this differ in different places. A lot of it is just a rise, in our culture, a rising pet population.
I'm seeing that there are 200 million stray dogs in the world, but 70 million stray animals in America, including cats.
Oh, I see that too. But 200 might be a low estimate worldwide. It looks like it might be as high as 600 million.
I bet you they weren't counting those ones I met in Romania.
Because that's that's the thing. It's famous.
That farmer knew about them.
You can, but he might not have an accurate count.
No.
He might be somewhere between 8 and 30. You know,
and that
kind of error multiplies.
I mean, if you ask a farmer in Romania how far it is to the next village, he's going to say between 8 and 30 kilometers. That's very frustrating.
Some of these dogs start their lives as pet dogs or offsprings of pets, and a growing pet population unfortunately means a growing stray dog population because not every new pet owner is a responsible owner.
I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought stray dogs were the product of stray dogs meeting other stray dogs coming through the rye.
That's often true. But the pet population's on the rise. You know, typically, it's about 1 to 2% a year. In 2020, the beginning of the pandemic, the U.S. pet population went up 7%. And those are a lot of people who were not ready to have dogs.
Oh, they were just bored and lonely.
Pandemic dogs.
Do people still like just kick the dog out when they can't care for it and the dog just wanders off?
I think that probably happens because not all people are nice. I think some people might take the dog to a shelter, but that just increases, you know, the shelter thing doesn't scale, especially if it's a, you know, no-kill shelter. You just cannot find, if there's, you know, if Houston has 1 million stray dogs, you just can't find enough households. For, you know, Houston probably has about that many households, right? Like there's, you know, you can't fix it by adopting all those dogs. But on the other hand, you know, we don't like to think about euthanasia in shelters. We prefer to have shelters that don't put dogs down.
Well, some of us, hippies, do.
Soft-hearted hippies. I mean, the other solution besides euthanasia would be TNR, trap, neuter, and release.
Right.
And as you point out, if you do that often enough, eventually... you don't get new stray dogs because a lot of them are, you know, feral litters born in the wild, never had an owner. But that's the kind of thing that gets, you know, it's extremely hard to do. The logistics of it are hard. It's the kind of thing that often does not get priority in municipal budgets. So whatever money should have gone to trapping, neutering, and releasing stray dogs doesn't.
It's a pretty industrial process. You're going to know the answer to this, but are dogs able to... I mean, I know they thrive within cities because there's just a lot of food scrappage. But are wild dogs in the woods able to cobble together a living out of eating pigeon eggs and whatnot?
I mean, they're the descendants of packs of wolves and wild dogs that could do that anywhere.
But like little yappy purse dogs, how are they going to survive in the woods?
No, I think those are not the kind you're most likely to see in the woods. Those don't last long or they find a city. But you're right in that the reason why you tend to see them in cities is because that's where the food is, that's where the garbage is, that's where the rats are that they eat. And honestly, cities kind of benefit from somebody eating their garbage and keeping down the rat population, stray dogs and cats. In India, in fact, the stray dog population is exploding. India might have as many as 30 million stray dogs alone because of a drug that was given to cattle for many years called diclofenac. I don't know if I'm reading that right. Which is harmless to the cow and I guess prevents infections in cows.
But it gives dogs boners.
We want to give dogs bones. That's a common mistake. No, the problem is you have to follow the bouncing ball here.
Okay.
When vultures feed on cows, the diclofenac gives the vultures
boners.
Kidney problem.
Okay.
And when vultures have kidney problems, they die. And as a result, some of the most what used to be healthy, widespread vulture populations in South Asia are now almost wiped out because of all the stuff in the animal carcasses they eat.
This is the Silent Spring problem,
except with
vultures and cows.
With vultures instead of bird eggs. And as a result, when vulture populations die out, suddenly you've just got nature has a surplus of carrion.
Nature is not healing.
And nature abhors a surplus of carrion.
It does.
And it produces feral dog populations that will eat it.
Dogs are the vultures of India.
Dogs are now the vultures of India, and not by choice. Whoa. Indians didn't want it. Dogs didn't want it.
Vultures didn't want it.
Vultures sure didn't want it.
Cows didn't want it.
Vultures preferred to have functioning kidneys, but we gave all the cows diclofenac.
Why were we giving the cows diclofenac?
It's an anti-inflammatory.
Well, so you know what the solution is? Cow waterbeds. We've talked about this on Omnibus. The USAID needs to send cow waterbeds to India, and then they can stop giving cows arthritis medicine.
The cows will still have the arthritis and the joint aches, but they'll be so happy in their luxurious waterbeds.
They'll be laying on their warm waterbeds, and then the vulture population will rebound.
But, you know, imagine a vulture trying to eat a dead cow on a waterbed. You're going to get a lot of leaky waterbeds. So
imagine a vulture eating a dead cow on a waterbed. That's one of it. And it's an instance of a phrase that has never been spoken before today.
If you give that answer on a Rorschach test, you will immediately be thrown into prison.
Or you'll get a job at Google.
This is a vulture eating a dead cow on a waterbed. All right. You are the Riddler, it turns out. And you are never coming out of Arkham Asylum. So you've got all these kind of ecological pressures like that that are causing dog populations to spike above and beyond just humans centering in cities without well-funded sanitation infrastructures. But again, you know, Houston's got apparently 10 times as many stray dogs as Bangkok, so we can't pretend this is some problem the developing world has figured out.
I'm really having a hard time picturing 1 million stray dogs in Houston, but
that's because they're all in the same junkyard. Like the sun goes down and all the eyes just pop out like boop, 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 like in a cartoon. And of course there's one cat trying to eat a fish head out of a garbage can.
Right.
And then all the dogs come like in a Sylvester and Tweety cartoon. So in a world, and you know, this has been going on for a long time. Moscow has a famous population of stray dogs. That's, you know, Chekhov wrote about 150 years ago.
Right.
You know, there's a tradition of these cities respecting and having an uneasy truce with their dog populations. In Moscow, it's not uncommon to see stray dogs commuting to work on the subway. They'll just hop trains and go get to the place during the day where they get, you know, where the good garbage is. And then at night, they'll hop a train back to their alleys.
So what did we do? Like in New York, there are no stray dogs. In Seattle, there are no stray dogs. What did we do? There must have been stray dogs. When I was a kid, there were stray dogs all over the place.
I think we just generated enough hipsters that did not want to have kids.
Uh-huh. They
got their fur babies, John. They've got fur children.
Yeah, I know they do. Well, one of the things we did is stop setting our pets loose. Right. There was a lot of.
Yes. And we started spaying and neutering them. Places like New York and Seattle tend to have, by the numbers, well-educated pet owners.
The first thing you do when your pet is of age is have them neutered.
Because we all watch The Price is Right.
Right.
And we know what you're supposed to do.
Bob Barker tells you what to do.
But I think that's less of a tradition in rural areas, less right. educated areas, you know, areas well, yeah, with different culture around pet ownership.
Rural areas, you know, those American dogs got to have their freedoms, Ken.
And there might be elements of, oh, and we want puppies. You know, right? Like if we, of course we can't neuter our dog. We want to have a litter every year.
You know what it's like when you meet somebody that's got a dog and it's not neutered.
I don't know what that's like.
Oh, well, depending on the dog, it can be pretty impressive.
Even neutered dogs will hump your leg.
No. I'm talking about
that's an old proverb. Even a neutered dog will hump your leg.
It loses something when you translate it from the French.
Yeah, in Arabic, it's beautiful. Yeah.
But no, when you meet a pit bull or a Rottweiler that's not neutered, boy, you sure can tell the difference.
Because they have the tendency toward aggression that
comes
with
that. Have enormous heads. They're just very different. You know, the hormones change their bodies.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought. I had no idea.
Or at least maybe I'm making that up. Maybe there's a futureling that's a veterinarian that's going, no, that's not how it is.
They just seem bigger.
They do seem bigger.
Because they're trying to eat you and your bindle as you cross Romania.
Yeah, they're not trying to hump you. They're looking at you like you're a prey.
But this being the internet age, we are now living in a time, for the first time, of celebrity street dogs. The thing, in ages past, the defining characteristic of street dog was their anonymity.
I thought it was the tumors.
They kind of, and they're tumors. Well, I mean, that's why. They knew that they were not, pretty lap dogs. They were not interested in that kind of relationship with people.
Well,
they tend to skulk.
When dogs breed outside of human intervention, they all kind of return to dog, right? Don't they? Right. They all end up kind of looking.
A beige mongrel that has
long
all
ear.
The, yes. And if you look at pictures of the four dogs we're about to meet by name in this entry, you will recognize characteristics of the dog, the kind of colorless, you know, the color we are as middle-aged tan people.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of honey color that all dogs become.
The Ethiopian dog.
The floppy ears. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's that breed has a name.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's Ethiopian dog.
Ethiopian dog, I think. But these are dogs that have come to the attention of the locals and then to the media and then to the internet.
Wait, are these Instagram dogs?
These are activist dogs. These are the dogs of protest, the dogs of uprising against power, which is appropriate because, you know, if anybody can identify with being marginalized, living on the fringes of society, being frustrated with fraying social contracts and safety nets, street dogs are a pretty good symbol for all of this.
Interesting.
The story of celebrity dogs of the left, you might say. These are dogs that are almost universally compatible with Marxism.
Okay.
This story starts in Athens in 2008.
Georgia? Or Athens, Greece.
It's a house party in Athens, Georgia, where without warning, Pylon begins to play.
Whoa, Mitch Easter shows up and he's got seven dogs.
Wait, I thought this was going to be a B-52s cover band, but this is actually two original B-52s. No, this is in Athens, Greece, which has been the center of a lot of urban protest.
Oh my God, and so many street dogs in Athens, Greece.
That is correct. In 2008, I had forgotten this wave of Greek riots, but...
you know what? I've forgotten more waves of Greek riots than you've had hot dinners.
I mean, I was kind of assuming this would be the austerity riots, but no, those are like 2011. 3 years before...
Oh my God. If you put Athens into Google, the first thing that shows up before even the wiki Athens, capital of Greece, is Athens dog shelter.
Wait, really?
It's the first thing that came up.
Do you think that could be context? Were you just Googling about dogs in that window?
Oh, I was.
Because I think that's what happens.
Oh, that's so weird.
That's the predictive text of the universe.
I put in Ethiopian dog, and then the next thing I said Athens, and they were like, dog shelter?
And to Google, that's genius. Well, of course we want to continue the line of search you've been doing. How convenient.
Yeah. Would you like to go to a dog shelter in Athens, Georgia?
No. You need to go to DuckDuckGo, the browser that knows nothing about you and doesn't care. Doesn't care to. It's more like a cat. Google's the eager to please dog browser that's like, oh, dog shelters in Athens? DuckDuckGo is like a cat that's like, I'm going to tell you the same thing no matter what.
Wait a minute. Do you use DuckDuckGo?
No. I have already given all my information to the cloud and the government and Jeff Bezos. Okay. He knows, they all know everything. They're talking about me right now, probably.
Yeah.
Like you could, you could reverse engineer probably half the things I will think today based on my profile owned by six tech companies. But we have friends that use DuckDuckGo. Did you know George Meyer will only search things in DuckDuckGo?
Really? That's consistent with...
It is. Yeah. He doesn't want the man to know what he's searching. So, because he comes from a time, like, I think he's being a little older than me. I think he's from a time when he actually had some expectation of privacy in the public sphere, you know? And you and I are like, oh, that's so
aren't
naive.
You cute?
I would like to give all my pictures to the internet for free. I think Zuckerberg should have them all.
Well, I mean, last time I saw him, he was listening to his Zune.
So in 2008, there was a wave of protests in Greece that tragically enough started with a 15-year-old dying in police custody.
2008. 8 and 3, they look the same.
You've got to finish the 3 and you'll get an 8.
My synesthesia always...
This happened in central Athens. And as a result, you know, it's just as it would happen in America, that leads to, and of course, Athens is already, you know, young Athens is already kind of a powder keg of a generation realizing that it has less opportunity than its parents, that things are looking worse and not better.
This was part of that. The Greeks had all that debt to Europe.
Well, that's coming up, but their economy is already, struggling. And as a result, there's not a lot of opportunity or employment for young people. It's the kind of situation that leads to a Watts riot or something, where you can point to the specific. You can point to this in
Pacific.
You know, LA is on the Pacific. You can point to the specific act of the specific law enforcement misdeed that kicks it off.
Right.
But
it's really about student loans and high rent.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just about years of lack of opportunity and. You know, the kind of grievance that comes with that. Anyway,
it's hard for the Greeks to be mad about colonialism.
Well, when you invent democracy, you invent all the things that came after that. You know, you invent all the bad side effects of Western civilization, too. So the Greeks are really to blame for all of this.
Yeah, no, it's all on their shoulders.
And as a result, students start to rise up. You get familiar stories in the paper of universities becoming centers of protest. You get... you know, riot police in the streets wearing stormtrooper looking uniforms, spraying people with hoses while young people shake chant. Their fists and chant and rhyming things in Greek.
Set cars on fire.
And shout about how, you know, it's not too late to make a better world. Why are we cutting this, this, and that and killing poor Alexandros Grigoropoulos? Journalists covering these protests start to notice something interesting, which is the same dog is starting to appear in all the pictures. And as you've pointed out, street dogs often do kind of converge on the same appearance.
But that's racist.
It's a little bit racist. And in fact, journalists who are following the story will confirm that, yeah, this is in fact... the same dog.
Like all over town? Or are the protests just happening in the same square and the dog lives there?
It starts out being localized. This turns out to be a dog called Canelos, or Cinnamon. He's kind of cinnamon colored, like often these dogs are, we've said. Who was a fixture at the National Technical University of Athens. It's not unusual in street dog cultures for the university to be a place where you've got a lot of young, tender-hearted people who will feed a friendly dog.
Sure.
So this tends to be a place where the better human-conditioned street dogs wind up and end up eating delicious stuffed grape leaves all day. All the hummus you can eat. And around 2007, Canelos was well enough known that the university actually hired a dog catcher, you know, to get rid of this nuisance.
Oh, just the one dog. They said... We need to get Canelos out of here.
I mean, I think he was the one that was skulking less and had more of a public profile because everyone was feeding him and loving on him.
Uh-huh.
And he was popular enough that the students actually submitted a petition and got hundreds of students to petition the university to bring back Canelos. He's lived here a long time. This is actually his home. It's morally equivalent to an eviction.
They're just trying to avoid doing their homework.
As is true of students everywhere. But the university agreed, and some students agreed to become kind of guardians of Canelos and watch over him. Now, in these clips, including video clips, you can see that Canellos is marching with the students that he identifies with who feed him and like him. And, you know, at first he's not marching. You know, he's
no.
He starts out like like Jem and Scout. He doesn't have a social conscience.
Yeah, he's a dog. He's going in and out, probably.
He's just chilling.
Yeah.
But then, just like Jem and Scout, the world starts to intrude upon Canellos's simple view of humanity, and he starts to see the students he loves get tear gassed or sprayed with hoses. And this radicalizes Canellos. He's like, wait, now I've got my pack, the nice kids that give me
grape leaves.
That give me grape leaves and pita. And then we got these guys wearing the black masks that are wailing on them.
Pretty clear that you can tell the good humans from the bad humans.
Canellos becomes anti-cop. He will he will start to bark and snarl at anybody he sees in a police uniform. He will patrol the lines between the protesters and the cops as a dog would protecting its pack on duty. And so it's very easy for journalists to get pictures of him leading marches, you know, because he's the one making himself the barricade between the police and the protesters. He will lie down in the street in front of cops, you know, which kind of borrows from the language of demonstrations and sit-ins.
Right.
But it's just him kind of casting a wary eye on the threat to the pack.
And what's interesting is in Greece and Italy, there are, I mean, one in every three adult people is a cop, right? There are like 17 different kinds of cops.
And the other two are like out of work marchers, probably. This is the only two kind of people
cops
there are.
Cops and anarchists. In the Mediterranean. All you have.
He had lived for 10 years and was getting to be an older dog around this time. So as the universe is starting to notice Canellos, you know, and there start to be photo essays on him on social media, and from then on into The Guardian or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Canellos is getting old enough that he's not getting around as well as he used to. The students get band together, get their money together, and buy him one of those cute doggy hind leg wheelchairs.
What?
Have you ever seen a dog that's walking on its front legs but rolling on its back?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, we love these dogs.
There's
we?
One in the neighborhood here. But you're telling me that this is a street dog that has his own wheelchair.
Yes, which is a little bit rare. And, you know, at this point, he's probably a pretty quasi-street dog. He's hanging out in front of the student union,
right,
eating cafe food all day and probably, you know, getting brought into somebody's dorm at night.
Yeah.
But he continued to walk and roll with protesters, and until he passed away at the ripe old age of something past 10, which is pretty good for an Athens street dog, in July of 2008.
Are there pictures of him leading protests in his doggy wheelchair?
I see one of him walking with a group of marchers in his doggy wheelchair. So, you know, I don't know if he's still braving the front lines with or snarling at cops. But you can find him running alongside protesters and then rolling in their midst.
And do you think his presence inhibited the police?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, what an asset for nonviolent demonstrators, right?
Yeah, like a riot police person might be prepared to billy club some
college student.
Yeah, some like dread-headed anarchist, but they don't want to be bonking a dog, and they certainly don't want their picture in the newspaper bonking a dog.
I mean, there's both things, right? You've got the natural human love of animals, but also, yeah, how bad would this look? Although cops, historically, seem untroubled by how bad would this look. Probably more awareness now of cameras than there used to be. But yeah, I think absolutely Canellos was more than a cute symbol. He was probably a real asset to the movement. In 2011, also in Athens, this is after the EU and IMF have, you know, where Greece is really in danger of defaulting on its debt. And so a really strict public austerity measures are handed down to the Greek government, which leads to...
This deserves its own omnibus because, boy, that was a hilarious birthday cake of of bad
what
ideas.
A crazy thing for Angela Merkel to start cutting Greek welfare. We love that when that happens.
That's nuts.
Anyway, this led to massive, you know, the cuts to social services led to, again, massive riots in the streets of Athens. In a country with low employment, everybody's got lots of time to complain about the government.
Yes.
And photographers...
One in three people is a cop.
Photographers started to notice Canellos again... leading the protest. Now, the problem is that Canellos had died 3 years earlier. But to this day, you can find photo essays from Western papers noting that, once again, the beloved Canellos is back with the marchers. In fact, this turned out to be a different dog, Loukanikos, the Greek word for sausage, which seemed to be his nickname. I think, much like Columbus's ships, this new blonde mongrel dog was actually called Theodorus, and in some accounts may have been an offspring of Canellos, because he's also connected to Athens university culture. And Loukanikos, the sausage, appears to be even more bravely leftist and even more photogenic than his predecessor.
I see a picture here of a riot cop kicking Loukanikos.
Yes, there are pictures. So there's much trafficked pictures of a cop kicking Loukanikos, and one of Loukanikos picking up a spuming tear gas canister with his mouth to move it away from his pack. In other words, the university students who are protesting the austerity measures.
Totally facing down a bunch of shielded riot cops and barking right at their faces.
The imagery is irresistible.
Wow.
So you can see why, and you know, and it crosses the lines. It gets you a new audience for your social movement.
Right.
In the countries that normally would not look at a photo essay of, well, guess what? They've taken to the streets in Tbilisi again, you know, like the American brain soon tires of
Greek students,
identical looking student revolutions in places they cannot find on a map.
But a handsome dog.
If there's a cute blonde dog barking at every cop it sees.
Well, and we also believe that dogs, or rather, when I say we, I mean those of us who call our dogs, our fur babies, believe in the wisdom of animals, right? Their ability to discern good from bad people, right, using their dog telepathy.
If you're sympathetic to these protesters, this really confirms your belief of, you know, the little guy rising up against...
Yeah, the faceless man.
The armor-clad policeman. And of course, that's just because of, you know, he's supporting the people who were feeding them. The police, in many places, the police have dogs. You know, right. Famously, during the American Civil Rights struggle,
dogs were not on the side of justice in that photo opportunity.
It was the tobacco chewing sheriff and his evil deputies that was feeding the dogs best. And so,
although we cannot blame the dogs,
the dogs were being sicked on who they were told to be sicked on, yeah. And that's unfortunate. So Loukanikos lived a long and famous life. Apparently in September 2011, there was a big protest in the streets of Athens where the police union started marching for, you know, better benefits for law enforcement.
Oh, a police protest.
And other federal riot police came to put down the police protest. And
what does Loukanikos do?
Loukanikos had no idea what to do. And apparently, in the account I read, Loukanikos was confused at first. And then by looking at the situation, it was very clear which cops were closest to its pack. You know, were acting in the language of protest, and which cops were shaking sticks and throwing tear gas. And Loukanikos immediately sided with the police union marching against the riot police.
So Loukanikos did not sit this one out.
No.
He didn't take a knee.
Loukanikos had a heuristic that it used to determine who the less bad cops were.
Wow.
And protested accordingly with his usual vigor, barking and pacing back and forth on the front lines. Loukanikos lived in the home of a man who cared for him, and I guess passed away in May 2014 at a pretty reasonable age of about 10 years old. Although local papers reported that his years of exposure to tear gas and police kicks probably did nothing to improve his health. He was beloved by this point and was buried in a, I guess, under a tree in a kind of a public grassy area in central Athens. So I think you can visit Leukonikos' final resting place today. At this point, we jump across the Atlantic Ocean, well, and much of Europe and the Mediterranean and South America,
boing,
to Chile, where you have seen the street dogs of Santiago. What was your experience there? When were you in Chile?
Oh, let's see. Well, it would have been 2000 and what do you want? 2006, seven, something like that. And there are street dogs all over Santiago. And I found them to be at first fairly intimidating because there are a lot of them. But then I interacted with them and they seemed to, at least in my experience, be mostly pretty lazy and chill.
You're kind of perpetuating stereotypes about Latin America here.
About street dogs only in Latin dogs. America. Yeah, only the dogs. The people of Santiago are very industrious. But yeah, and I just, there was a particular cafe that I would sit at, and the street dogs were kind of regulars there. They weren't like, that was what impressed me about them. They didn't come over and beg. They couldn't have been less interested in the people at the cafe.
But they must know that that works.
Yeah.
There was a steady stream of tourists who wouldn't mind tossing a...
You throw something down or, you know, but they weren't, they were not like American dogs that were needy. They were the opposite of needy. They were just like, whatever, man.
I wonder if that's a side effect of not, you know, of being raised by other dogs and not by humans. You know, humans crave the approval of the pack, and not having it from fellow dogs, they get it from the pack that you make for yourself, your human family.
Yeah, it had that effect where it felt like this is a culture that's living within the city, but completely separate from human culture.
I mean, not that different from some of the off-the-grid people we've discussed in other entries, like Slab City.
Yeah, but they
formed their own community. And
yeah, they feel like
would like to be left alone.
How would you describe it? Like almost a science fiction story where there were two separate species inhabiting the same city but not seeing each other.
Mm.
Right, like almost like ghosts.
Right. I mean, and that's true of how we talk about unhoused populations as well.
Right.
You know, like your eye just goes right over them. And in many cases, that's what both parties in the interaction want, which is sad. In Chile, there was a black dog who lived near the campus, near the University of Santiago campus, that a woman named Maria Campos took in because, you know, it's kind of the thing where you greet, you're on the same, just like seeing the same commuter on your train. You're on the same pattern as them.
Right.
You start to greet the dog. The dog starts to recognize you. You start to bring tidbits for the dog. The dog follows you home. The dog sleeps outside. Eventually, the dog starts sleeping at the foot of your bed. So this dog who came to be known as... This black dog starts... I'll leave the name for a second. This black dog starts sleeping near the campus in the home of Senora Campos. And being near the campus... He also becomes accustomed to the students who are away from home and their own dogs. So they love having a mascot dog hanging around school. So they start giving treats to their furry friend, although he still sleeps at Campos's house. She gives him, because he's still wandering the streets during the day, but comes home at night, she gives him a collar with a phone number on it and a little cape.
Mm.
And the students, you know, recognize him now, not just by his black fur, but by his cape.
It's pretty recognizable to wear a cape.
Right. And dogs with bandanas are pretty cute.
Dogs with bandanas are cute, but I think if you put a cape on almost anything, it's going to stand out.
In 2011, the students throughout Chile, but especially at Santiago University, are not happy with Chilean education policy. And you and I, I'm sure, could talk for hours about the problems of public education in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to nationalize the public education system because there's not a lot of equality or opportunity or financial aid. It's actually been 1990 since a new public university has built, with the result that most high school students don't attend public school and can't go to university. So there are large-scale protests going on about the public education crisis in Chile and Santiago. Just as in Athens, police are shooting water cannons and tear gassing big crowds of students. Now, this dog has followed his friends to the protest and he starts seeing them threatened. So now, again, in the papers, there are pictures of this black dog wearing a cape at the front of the marches, growling at the cops, yapping away at the cops, baring his teeth. And the students say they always knew without question that he was on their side, that he could tell.
Sure.
He could tell his friends from the man.
He was compatible with Marxism.
And the students actually put a, replace his cape with a colored bandana. I think red. I don't want to speculate too much, but a color of the left.
Mm-hmm.
And they rename him El Negro Matapacos, which means the black cop killer.
Whoa.
Now, I know,
easy, right? Has he killed a cop? Or is that a little bit of an exaggeration?
He has not. In fact, Matapacos means it's a very specific, I think a Santiago-specific pejorative for a bad cop.
Oh.
You know, the same way you might say pig in anti-establishment.
So he's not a cop killer. He's like a bad lieutenant.
Yeah, but you know, he's against the bad lieutenants. Like he's a killer.
I see. But bad lieutenants.
Paco specifically of dirty bad cops.
I see.
Of violent cops. So it's not quite as inflammatory as it would be in America to be like, yeah, I named my dog Black Cop Killer.
that would be inflammatory.
So every day, Campos, and so he starts to appear on the news, and Maria Campos sees her celebrity dog on TV, and she knows that every day where he's going, every day she opens, at night if he hears chanting, he's by the front door, like, gotta go out.
Really? This is his big thing.
Like a dog who needs to pee. And she, every morning, gives him his kiss, does the sign of the cross on him, apparently an observant Catholic, and lets him out. And he makes a beeline for wherever the street protests are that day. And every night he comes back from direct action, drenched from water cannons, and she dries him off and puts him to bed. And then it's back to work the next day. He was a tireless agent for educational reform in Chile.
Wow.
He died in 2017, after which he gained his greatest fame. Pictures, he starts to appear on protester signs, on murals. Because he's a black dog with a red bandana.
Did they make him into a Che Guevara t-shirt?
It really lends itself to that kind of street art and iconography.
Whoa.
So he starts to appear on stickers and posters and murals as a symbol of putting down the man. And this spreads to other continents. In New York City, in 2019, a couple years after El Negro Matapacos' death, during a, there were some protests in New York that summer based on, I think there was video of MTA cops, pulling their guns on a kid who had jumped a turnstile.
Right.
So there became all these protests of sympathy with Theravading on the New York City subway. And so stickers of El Negro Matapaco start to appear all over the New York City subway with a sign that says evade. He became a symbol for subway Theravasion in Manhattan and all over the world. Like when there are protests all over the somewhere in the world now, youth protests, it's become customary to put a red bandana on the statue of Hachiko that stands outside Shibuya Station in Japan, if you remember this earlier omnibus entry.
He gets a red bandana now, too.
In sympathy with El Negro Matapacos, and by extension, good left-leaning dogs worldwide. The second Chilean dog, we have a new Chilean riot dog who has taken on the mantle after El Negro Matapacos' death in the northern port city of Antofagasta. I don't know if you know it. I do not.
I have not been there, no.
There has been a, also in 2019, there were protests about, this happened in Hong Kong as well. Often city protests will happen when, transit fares go up.
Right.
Apparently there was a big jump in metro and bus fares in Antofagasta. And so students and working people hit the streets in protest for a few days. During these marches, hundreds of stray dogs would join the protesters because, again, something to do for these dogs.
Yep. It's pretty boring being a street dog, really, most of the time.
But one has become more famous than any of them just because he's very, very photogenic. He's a street dog with black spots. So they call him El Baquita, the little cow, because he kind of looks like a Holstein or whatever. He's got kind of a cheeky tail that's often in the air and wagging, as he does what all these riot dogs do, you know, weave through lines of protesters to get to the front of the march, where he can bark at the cops and try to protect his pack from the tear gas and the cannons.
El Baquita has a very friendly face.
Yes. I mean, I hate to be lookist about this, but it is often the best looking street dogs that become stickers and murals and not the tumory ones.
And yet I gotta say, El Baquita is El Chonco.
Yes, I was going to say that as well. He's a very well-fed street dog, and I wonder if some of that is following his celebrity.
Yeah, maybe.
But he's pudgier than your average.
Yeah, he's thick with two C's.
You're not seeing any ribs on this dog.
No.
And he's become a local icon. He won the city's 2019 Character of the Year Award, in which Antofagasta voted for the leading Antofagastan of the Year.
Hmm.
And he beat all the human comers, including the pride of Antofagasta, Victor Coyao, Chile's great karate champion, celebrity karate champion. Finished second to a cow-colored dog.
On the one hand, you want to say, like, yay for the dog. But on the other hand, you know, there are real people vying for this trophy that is going to go up on their mantle of, you know, the other things, like your trophy.
Is this like when Bob Dylan won the Nobel Prize and all these real voices of protest in Morocco and China were like, hey, we're doing art.
He doesn't even want it.
Dylan's fine.
He doesn't even know what it is.
That guy hasn't had a motorcycle crash in 45 years. But El Baquita is now the icon of Antofagasta. You know, when he takes a rubber bullet, protesters take him to the vet. When he gets lost and can't get back to his part of town, because, you know, he'll show up no matter where the protests are. you know, networks of online protesters will
where's Baquita?
Yes, will arrange to get him back to his to where the alleys where he likes to spend the night in his part of town. So there's a whole community around these symbolic dogs now, and like I say, it brings awareness to what would have been kind of local causes and keeps them on front pages and getting internet clicks.
See, this is one thing that the Spare and Neuter Your Pets program has deprived Seattle of, which is, think about how all of our protests would have been so much more.
Our protests turn unlikable the longer they go as the weirdo black bloc guys get into town and commandeer them.
Because we don't have a photogenic chunky dog that is at the on the front lines.
If we had a fun Antifa dog with fun spots,
yeah, and a Johnny bandana or a cape, even better.
I feel like the wrong elements would not be the ones on the front lines, and you would really not be able to gin up all this kind of fear of you know, all this scaremongering around
the Portland anarchists Instead,
if they all were given treats to cute dogs the whole time,
yeah, we'd seem like a bunch of harmless Greek students.
But the problem is, in Portland, everybody's out with their weird pet. Everybody's got a cockatoo on their shoulder.
Oh my God!
And nobody wants a riot cockatoo.
And that concludes Riot Dogs, entry 1075.MK0728, certificate number 53229, in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, it almost certainly has been taken over by just Instagram selfies of tourists with riot dogs. Right? Why is that? Why have I not?
Yeah, what if there's now 10 riot dogs for every human protester in the future? That it's the dogs who care.
The thing is, you're not really on Instagram, are you?
No.
And you don't spend any of your time on protest Twitter. Or I'm guessing very little, because you only respond to people with blue check marks.
Well, I see protest Twitter, but I'm not like mixing it up. But I'm not sending like a fist emoji to to the people of Azerbaijan or whatever.
I bet you there's a whole corner of the internet dedicated just to people taking pictures of themselves with protest dogs. Hashtag protest dog.
I mean, for sure, much of the internet is now people making sure they get good photos of themselves as protests. Like, yes. this is riot dogs are just a symptom of the broader, let me make sure I have my funny sign for the protest because I might go viral.
Futurelings, I would like to encourage you, if you are on social media, to try and get the hashtag protest dog trending after this episode comes out. And let's see how, I mean, you can put basically anything up there, hashtag protest dog.
I guess we called the show Riot Dogs, and that's...
Oh, Riot Dogs, even better.
But we're kind of... That's kind of adopting the language of the oppressor to say that...
Oh, right. It's not a riot. It's a protest.
They're uprisings. These aren't riots.
So, hashtag protest dog. Try and get it out. Even if it's just a picture, a selfie with you, of you and your purse dog, just tag it, hashtag protest dogs, and let's see if we can get this going.
You got to do what it takes to make your little Chihuahua or Havanese look extremely... Antifa.
Put a red bandana on them print out a picture of some riot cops.
Put a little Che shirt on your dog.
You can, but not
one of those pussy hats. Dogs would hate those.
Right, but a cat, you might be able to.
I mean, I think there's a reason why you don't see cats at these protests.
Yeah, right.
Cats are like,
cats are pro cop. Nope. Is why.
Cats are pro cop.
Tweet these things to Ken at Ken Jennings and to me, Ghost John at John Roderick. You can email us pictures of your protest dogs, hashtag protest dogs at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can share those pictures and all of your protest dog experiences with other futurelings on social media, wherever futurelings are found. You can mail us real live things.
This came all the way from Australia, for example. The package I'm opening now, which means the postage must have cost an order of magnitude more than the contents.
Well, then let's make the gag worth the investment.
Owen sent us a book that he bought in his 20s when he thought this would be the new shape of his life. And in fact, now he's 42 years old, living in Australia, and feels like he has missed his chance. So he wants us to have his copy of Duffy Little John's Hopping Freight Trains in America.
Oh, the wonderful Duffy Little John tome.
I guess Owen never rode the rails. Are you familiar with this book? It kind of has a self-published vibe.
Yeah, I've never owned it, but I've seen it.
It seems to have plenty of practical advice. Chapter titles include, how do I find a freight yard and get into it?
Yep.
That classic question we've all had.
Look for the trains.
Chapter 14, over the road do's and don'ts.
One of the ways, one of the things that make trains easy to find is that they actually have tracks. You can follow the tracks.
And the puffs of smoke that go choo, 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 choo. Uh-huh. If you see puffs of smoke getting gradually smaller. I don't know why this is in chapter 18. How do I get off a freight train?
Oh boy.
Maybe you want to put that earlier in the book.
No. Read the book from cover to cover.
But do you feel like you should hop on the train and then read chapter 18?
Well, hop on the train during the chapter that says how to hop on a freight train and then keep reading.
Common misconceptions here from chapter 21. First, but don't just bums ride freight trains?
No.
That is correct. But isn't riding the rails just for guys?
No.
Also correct. But won't I get mugged?
A 50-50 chance?
Yeah, this is the first one that does not begin, no! This one's like, well...
sort of depends.
Most professional homos stick to themselves or only congregate with people they know.
True, except for the creeps.
But won't I die from the heat or cold?
No.
Not if you're prepared in advance.
Bring a sleeping bag / bottle of water.
How about this one? But isn't it illegal?
Yes.
Friends, it most assuredly is. This is not a misconception.
I know all these answers.
This should not be in the common misconceptions chapter then. But this is very interesting. What follows is an appendix. Oh, it's a list of all the towns where you can catch a freight train.
The answer is any town with a train going through it.
Yes. Here in the state of Washington, it's an extremely long list.
Let me... just recommend that, or just remind our listeners that the Yardley Yard in Spokane is a very dangerous place. Stay out of there.
Oh, you know what? There's some text missing here, so we don't have all the Eastern Washington train yards. We're actually missing stuff between the end of the Virginia entry and the beginning of the
Wait, you mean a page got ripped out?
Well, no, but just some text appears to have been missing in the manuscript here. It's a lacuna.
Oh.
It does say that in Seattle, it lists these yards. 23rd Street, Balmer, Interbay, Garfield Street, North Portal, King Street Station, Whatcom Yards.
Can confirm.
I can't imagine. Where would you hop a freight train in Seattle? Interbay?
No. Well, Interbay, if you're headed north, and then you can get down to the tracks around the, sort of right around the Costco, south. And I've actually jumped a train there, but it was a bad idea. It was ill-advised.
I mean, I think now at your age, maybe you should just go to Costco. If you're down there?
I came to that same conclusion at a certain point, and it was a lot younger than I am now that and it was actually this occurrence. I jumped on a train as a gag, in Georgetown, and I was suddenly struck by the fact that no.
And you're like, you know what? If I want to take a little trip, what if I get some cheap Costco gas and
take a little trip
and hop in my automobile?
It was just, you know, when I was young, I didn't have any fear, and now I have a lot of fear.
Your back legs are going to be in one of those little wheelchair things soon.
Anyway, if you want to mail us other books about hopping freights, that's at P.O. Box 55744 Shoreline, Washington, 98155 USA.
Thank you, Owen.
And if you would like to support the show to make it so that I never have to hop freights again.
Your Patreon donation keeps John off the away from the hobo yards.
I'm always 1 month away from having
1 month away from the hobo jungle.
Ride the rods. Your generous donation at patreon.com/omnibusprojects, omnibus project singular, helps us helps me help my hamburger, helps me make a great meal.
It helps John's hamburger help him make a great meal. Is Hamburger Helper the thing you eat when you're not getting enough Patreon donations, or the things you eat when you are getting enough Patreon donations?
I have to admit that I have not eaten Hamburger Helper since the 1970s.
I haven't either.
I don't even remember. Is it good? It must be.
I remember a lot of it being based on those dehydrated potato slices.
Oh.
That also show up in those scallop potato mixes.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I was like, sure. Like, reconstitute me some potatoes, Mom. Today, I wonder if I would have texture issues.
Hamburger Helper. Does hamburger need help?
Well, it's the carb. It's the rice or the noodles that your hamburger will float in.
Yeah. Okay.
You've got the hamburger. It's got the bang bang.
I get it now.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long this our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, if the stray dogs take over all our cities, take over the wreckage of all our cities, then this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.